fear and, you know, indecision and reticence and inhibition more than anything else, or a little more than anything else, because sometimes there's wonderful interactions and good relationships I have with women, but especially with women who don't know me, I think it's very unevolved right now, you know, in like a feminist sense. It's very, it's kind of a drag sometimes, and I never want to blame it on the female, because I think it's just a whole societal malaise, but it just gets frustrating. So.
Yeah, thanks for that comment. And you're right. I mean, it is kind of like discouraging when we see this moment of like really starry-eyed idealism and then plainly did not come to pass. But I really think it's worth asking why that is, and could we reclaim that with a little bit more sadder but wiser? I don't know about the word maturity, but like from experience to maybe see like, okay, what went wrong? How could we maybe reclaim some of this optimism, but with some realism about how do we actually need to put this into practice? And well, another thing, since you mentioned evolution, being in this little, you know, anarchism pedanticness thing that I'm on today, I just think it's worth pointing out that Kropotkin, one of the major classical theorists of anarchism, one of his big points was that evolution is really not about competition and survival of the fittest. It's really about collaboration and mutual aid among various life forms. And you know,
all right, huh? Yeah, there is no. Okay, I'm totally open to that. There is symbiosis. I mean, I think some things are competing naturally, but there's totally a lot of different situations. It is interconnected, and one thing falls, and you know, it's often. I don't know if Kropotkin had anything to say about this, but it's often as well the largest animals. They always fall first, man, and it's just, it doesn't take some biological expert to understand why. They need a lot more resources. They're just higher maintenance, man.
That's true.
Polar bears, they're going to go first before some little, you know, tundra insect, I'll tell you that much, you know, and we're at the top of the food chain. And one last thought, and I'll let you get back, and maybe this will stimulate, you know, other people to call, and I want to free the lineup, but I really feel, from my perspective, it's like it's not pacifism that's going to solve it sometimes. I think it's women having self-defense classes, the whole woman warrior ethic. Like, the man side of that has been so valued and so overemphasized for so long. I mean, it's not what I relate to, or, you know, I mean, I think everybody should know self-defense, but I don't feel very warrior-like, but I think that could, like, exterminate some of just the physical fear that's there, and then we'd be more on, like, an equal footing.
Yeah, that's a really good point, too. And thanks for those rich comments, and I hope that people do respond and call in. Yeah.
All right, thanks for your show.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
If anyone else wants to call in, we totally welcome it. The area code here is 831, and the phone number is 427-3772. We're aiming for this to be a space of dialogue and, you know, interaction. So maybe in the interim, or in the part that is us putting stuff out, I wanted to invite Joe to read Nowish. Are you? Yeah. Those headphones won't work, but Maya's will work. This is the first time in my tenure at the station that I've used all three mics. It's very exciting.
Is this working?
Yeah. Okay, hold on. Oh, wait a minute. It's not. It's not working. Okay, we're not going to use that mic, but Maya will just move mic 2 over. Sorry for the limpings.
Okay, hello. I'm Joanna, and I just wanted to give a little book report, actually. I've been thinking a lot about how, you know, I think actually the last caller kind of spoke to this in a way, how some of the moral arguments for feminism or for anarchism sometimes don't work if we don't have a really good structural analysis of how these things all come together. And a book that I found really useful to start thinking about these structural problems is called Patriarchy and Accumulation on a World Scale, and it's written by Maria Mies. And some of the main things that she talks about in the book are sort of our current moment, and she frames them in terms of, you know, thinking about, you know, post-industrial, you know, all the kinds of questions of globalization that we've been, you know, we all on the left talk about all the time. You know, how do we think about these in terms of feminism? And she suggests that, you know, there's a lot of correspondence between the concept of flexibilization and what she calls housewifeization, which I never tried to say aloud before, and with varying success I'm doing so now. But, you know, and this isn't only just to talk about how labor right now is, you know, becoming increasingly informal and increasingly undervalued and unaddressable by traditional trade union and class politics, but also just the concrete fact that women are doing more of the work for less money and it's not being called work, and that this is a continual thing. But right now, this is really kind of coming to a head and can really be seen as, you know, a way that feminism more than ever really speaks to the class problems that we experience and, you know, the international division of labor in contemporary politics. And so she kind of goes back and also addresses some of the problems of traditional Marxist analysis by saying that, you know, the way that nature and culture are often divided in Marxist analysis really ignores the kind of fundamental sexual division of labor that is pre-capitalist, but really is in many ways proto-capitalist, because as soon as you start, you know, making that firm division of women's reproduction as nature, you're really saying that, you know, that that isn't social. And in fact, you know, women's reproduction is always social, and women are always appropriating their bodies in very skilled ways, and their skills in very skilled ways to kind of create sociality. And she has a whole argument about how in sort of primitive cultures, women were actually the hub of sociality while men were off alone doing their hunting and acting like that was a big deal when they brought home, you know, their one antelope to, you know, just the pounds and pounds of agricultural goods that the women had spent, you know, times in groups really coordinating and gathering. So she, you know, makes an argument that even in this can be seen as a continual thing, and in contemporary forms of the division of labor, a lot of what men do is kind of more the role of the hunter than the role of production, and it's a lot about, and that, you know, even, you know, contemporary continuations of rape and militarism is a form of, you know, it gets called production, but it really is about enforcing women and, you know, people who are cast out of roles of power to reproduce through force of the upper echelons who act as if they're the ones that are making the economy happen. So it's a really, you know, she has a really great structural analysis of the things that are happening and perhaps help us make sense of the fact, you know, that we can't, through our moral personal actions, sometimes feel like we can really address and change things because of these, you know, there are these huge structural problems. But, you know, she also really wants to show how women, you know, this kind of international division of labor really connects women, and all women are sort of involved in the global capitalist economy. And, you know, in different roles, and, you know, and that we have power through our housewifeization to try to forge those connections, whether we're, you know, interpellated, this is one of our little grad school words, put in the place of, or, you know, a housewife consumer, or a sort of unpaid producer of goods. We need to recognize our role in the housewifeization of women. And it's more and more easy for first world women to recognize their role as, you know, the kinds of, you know, privileges and benefits of living in the first world are gradually eroded, as we see since the 70s have been happening. And women really are poor in the first world now, too, and cast out of the little bits of power that they've gotten. So I was going to read you something, but I've been talking forever, so maybe that's enough for now.
Well, the other thing that I was just thinking about, I know someone who's writing a little bit about this book and
oh,
respects
really?
A lot, yeah, but also argues that maybe we should be thinking about the idea of feminization as an alternative to the term housewifeization, Swiftization. it's better in writing. To name the way that this is also not, this is a deeply non-middle class dynamic. And I think what you're pointing to at the end of your book report does speak to that in terms of, so how do these things hook together? The other book that sounds really excellent on this, if you all out there are interested in a book list, is Silvia Federici's Caliban and the Witch, mm-hmm. which is about, we talked about this last time we were on the radio too, primitive accumulation or original accumulation and the way that the processes of feminization constantly constitute that. Mm-hmm. But maybe we should transition now because we're going to have a conversation with Sarah in a couple of minutes. Are you able to stick around, Joe, for...
Okay. Sure.
Thanks for coming in. I'm going to just answer this phone, and while I answer it, here is a little bit of the gossip and a song called Dressed in Black.